You're listening to the Mom Inspired Show, episode 26 with Jennifer Allwood.
Welcome to the Mom Inspired Show. I'm your host, Amber Sandberg, and this show is created to inspire, encourage, and add a little extra fun to your day.
Hey, you guys, I just wanted to do a special shout out before I started this show. I was looking at my podcast statistics and I saw the top 10 countries that are listening to this podcast. In the first place is United States, which is not a shocker since I live here. So thank you to all of my American fans. But then it goes Canada, and then it goes Japan, Germany, Australia, Mexico, Spain, United Kingdom, and France. So I want to give a shout out to all of you guys that are listening, especially those of you that are not here in the United States. I am so inspired to see this because when I first started this, I wondered, you know, who's going to listen and, you know, who's going to be on my show. And it's crazy how this has transpired. You know, I'm having guests that are now not living in this country. And obviously I can see that I have listeners that are not from the United States. So I just want to say thank you so much for the support and listening to this podcast. And I just wanted to give you a shout out to you guys today and let you know that I'm thinking about you and I greatly appreciate all of you guys. This week we have Jennifer Allwood on from The Magic Brush. Jennifer is so enthusiastic. You will love listening to this episode. We talk about everything from her renewing her wedding vows in Florida to chatting about the comparison trap, painting kitchens, meeting Joanna Gaines, and decorating your own house for the way that you want it and not for resale value. I hope this brings some fun to your week and inspires you to make your house your own style. Let's go to the show. Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Amber. I'm super excited to be here.
Me too. So I like to start off every show with an icebreaker. I love to travel. And so I love asking people where their favorite destinations are. So what is your favorite vacation spot that you've gone to and why? And this can be with or without kids.
Oh, this is so good. Okay. So Sanibel Island. Oh, have you ever been?
It is on my list because my girls love seashells. So I want to hear all about it.
Okay, so here's why I like Sanibel. You know, I'm a business owner and we have three kids. And so that means busy. I mean, anybody that has, you know, kids understands just the hustle and the bustle. And when you add owning your own business on top of that, I find that one of the only ways I can kind of disconnect from social media and from business in general is to travel. And in a place like Sanibel Island, there isn't like the greatest amount of like Wi-Fi and stuff. You're kind of like
secluded out there.
And and it's funny, Amber, because there's actually only like one or two stop signs in the entire town or on the entire island. There are no stoplights. They literally have like, you know, the guy in the uniform who's out there directing traffic and there's no billboards or fast food anywhere. There's one Dairy Queen. And so we allow our kids even to have, you know, ice cream for breakfast because it's dairy.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be but I love going because it just makes me feel like we're kind of going back 20 years. Like the pace is slowed down.
Yeah.
And it just fills my soul for that purpose. So I'm going with Sanibel Island. That's my final answer.
Okay. So where do you get a condo or do you stay in a, cause I don't think they don't have high rises and stuff like that for.
No, they don't. They sure don't. They don't mess up the gorgeous view with all that stuff. So we normally stay in a little town called Cape Coral, where my husband's aunt owns a home. And so we are able to stay there and it's about a 30-minute drive from Sanibel and we just drive over every day. It's just pure bliss. I know.
Yeah.
Now you're making me want to book a flight.
I know. That is on my list. I've been waiting for my youngest to be older because she's two. And I knew that she probably wouldn't want to walk on all the shells. And so I'm like, okay, I want to go in the next few years when they can really enjoy just finding shells and just kind of doing stuff like that. But I still need to figure out like, because is it
Captiva Island. And so people that are listening to this are going to just probably, I'm going to be probably all wrong in the geography of this, but
that's okay.
I think they're connected.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I would need to look at a map. And so I don't really know when I'm there. Am I in Captiva or am I in Sanibel Island?
Yeah.
But all I know is it's paradise because there's not a really great, there's not a sign that says, you know, you're leaving one and going to the other.
Right.
And so, but I will tell you that I've never seen sunsets ever in my lifetime, like I've seen in Sanibel Island, and we've been there I think three times. And it's almost like magical. And I don't even understand why they're so intense there, but every color in the spectrum. And it totally just like reminds me of God's goodness when I'm there and just how amazing, you know, what a fun world we live in that we get sunsets. I mean,
I know. Yeah. Now, do you fly into, is it Tampa or where do you fly into? Oh, Fort Myers?
We fly into Punta Gorda.
Oh.
Or Fort Myers, either one.
Oh, okay. Okay. And now, do you go at a certain time of year every time, or do you go, have you gone different times, and one would you say is your favorite?
Okay. So we have, we vacation in the summer because, you know, our kids are out of school during the summer. When they were younger, it was easier to take them out of school during the school year. But then, you know, we got a couple letters from the school administrators and, you know, it's funny, they want their bums in a seat. And so we go every year in August, and let me just tell you that Florida in August, like you really have to be committed, either really loving it or you really have to have some great perk like us staying at Aunt Becky's house.
Yes. Because
Florida in August is, it's almost miserable unless you're on the water.
It's so hot.
Stinking hot. It's
and
so
humid.
Hot. Yeah. So I actually, my husband and I just went to Siesta Key 3 weeks ago with our best friends, with a group of friends that we do life with, and celebrated our friend's 45th birthday. Actually, she turned 46. I take that back. 46. And that was great. Siesta Key.
Where is that?
It's Florida as well. Don't ask me where in the whole state, though. All these Florida people that are listening are going to write your email.
Is it more southern than Sanibel?
I believe if you had a guess. Is.
Okay.
Yes, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, we won't quote you.
And so we've been in February to Florida.
Yeah.
February in Florida is marvelous.
Yes.
It's just marvelous. It was, you know, 80 degrees and we didn't have to worry about SPF 5000 because my husband and I are both really pale people. And it was just fantastic. And so if we could go to Sanibel Island in a month other than August, it would be absolutely glorious.
Yeah. But I think it is far enough down that you can go in the winter because, you know, we go to Destin area and you can't really go in February. It's too far north, but I do feel like Sanibel is south enough that you could definitely do that. So everybody's going to be running to Sanibel after this.
They are. Well, but Destin is one of our favorites.
Yes.
4 years ago, we do life and church and things with a group of, you know, seven or eight different families just that we've been friends with for a really long time. And we all decided we wanted to renew our wedding vows and that we wanted to do it with our kids. And, you know, we're kind of all in a different season of life with different friends than what we were, you know, 20 years ago when most of us got married. And so we planned this big thing in Destin and there was nine of us couples and we have 22 kids between us nine couples. Wow. And our pastor from Kansas City flew down and renewed our wedding vows on the beach in Destin. And it's seriously like one of the very best memories that I have. And so
that's
I love
Destin for that reason. Yes. Yeah. I love it too. Cause we can get there. We could drive. So that is a great place to get to.
Oh, you are so lucky.
Yeah. I mean, it's this gem. I don't know. I mean, it's becoming more and more known, and especially I'm not joking. Every interview I have, because a lot of people are from Nashville, that is like usually their favorite place. So I'm like, oh yeah, everybody's going to be going there now.
So. Everybody's in Destin. Yeah. We love Destin that we've been twice and it's beautiful. Last year we actually vacationed in La Jolla, California. We decided we've gone to Florida so many times. Let's go the other direction.
Yes.
And I think that I might be destined to live in Southern California. I mean the weather
there. It's perfect. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. I want to go to La Jolla and all those areas and Carlsbad. And I just want to go check out those places. So that's on our list too. But yeah, well, you and I probably could talk about vacations for the whole interview. And so how about we jump into the interview and how about you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Yeah, I'm 45 years old, live in Kansas City, Missouri, been happily married for most of our 20 years, happily married to the love of my life. You know, we've had, you know, a part of our testimony is some interesting years in the beginning when we first got married, as a lot of married couples have. And so glad that we stuck it out. And so we'll be celebrating 20 years this year, which is awesome. And we have three kids. Noah's 15, Easton is 13, and Ava Grace, who runs our household, is 9. And I own a decorative painting company in Kansas City. So we go into people's houses and we get to paint their cabinets and make their garage doors look like wood. And we get to do murals in kids' rooms and paint furniture. And that's super fun, which has kind of morphed into what is even now my bigger business, which is coaching women online on how to start and grow their creative businesses and how to use social media and how to make yourself stand out, you know, when there's so much chatter going on online.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So I love what I do.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so I'm going to back up because I introduced you as Jennifer, but we're just going to say this is Jennifer Allwood. And do you want to let everybody know what the name of your business is?
Sure. It's called The Magic Brush. And you can find my website at themagicbrushinc.com.
Right.
And so you find lots of ideas on how to paint your house and, you know, the perfect paint colors and how to do projects and put up wood walls and, you know, redecorate and those sorts of things. And that's super fun. I mean, I love decorating. I love creating like an environment with our house that feels really good to me and my family. Like the area that I live in is really important to me. Like how my house feels is a huge priority in my life because
yeah.
I think that we're so influenced by our surroundings.
Right.
And as the woman of the house and the heart of the home, we open up our house a lot to guests and to Bible studies and things like that. And so it's just important to me that our house feels a certain way and very welcoming and that we're using it not just for our family, but using it as a gathering place.
Yeah, I love that. And I wanted to go back to why did you start The Magic Brush? What made you decide, you know, I want to just do this? Were you just painting your furniture all the time? You're like, hey, I could do this as a business.
You know what? Actually, not. It's a funny story. I bought my first home, Amber, when I was 21 years old, which is, you know, not typical for a 21-year-old. So I bought the house. I mean, I could barely afford the mortgage. It was just my bare teeth that I could afford that. And so I knew that having a house that felt good to me was really important, but how did I do it when I could barely afford anything? And so I taught myself how to do a lot of DIYs. I taught myself how to be brave doing different projects, like crackling my own walls. And I spray painted my kitchen cabinets because I was too broke to
be able to
afford much more. And I would never recommend anybody do that now. And then I eventually found like a school, like a faux finishing school in our Kansas City area where I could go and like learn how to do this. And I was about 30 at the time when I decided I wanted to go to this painting school, and I was getting ready to graduate with a bachelor's degree in computer information systems. And I'll never forget, I went away to this weekend class where we learned how to like do texture on the walls and we learned how to tissue paper ceilings. And I came back from that class and my heart just like kind of palpitated like the whole weekend. Like I knew in my knower, okay, I love this so much. Like just getting my hands dirty in paint and being able to take like a blank wall and turn it into something, you know, really cool and to make columns look like marble that had previously been just white. And so I came home from that painting school and I told my husband, baby, I think I want to start a painting company. And he's always been such a huge support and rarely tells me that I'm insane, even when I am insane. And so he said, well, go for it. And so I started my little, you know, magic brush business on the side, never had any dream that that could be like a full-time income for me, and continued doing my software development job and then was laid off from that full-time gig. And in retrospect, that was just purely God's grace that I got laid off from that. And once I was laid off and realized, okay, gosh, let me see if I can make a little money, you know, doing a couple painting jobs for people. And then I was getting called back in to do interviews, you know, back in my original arena of software development. And I just kept thinking I would rather do anything. Like I felt so desperate to not go back to a cubicle that I'm willing to sacrifice, you know, my income and the 401k and all of that if I can be self-employed. I didn't realize how much I wanted to be in charge of my own career and my own destiny and where I was headed. And so, I just kept going with the painting. And shortly after that, we got pregnant with our first kiddo, Noah. And then I kind of panicked a little, you know, I have this brand new business and now I'm pregnant. And while that was such a blessing, like, how am I going to get up on ladders at 9 months pregnant?
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, because, people still want you to paint.
Exactly.
And so I started hiring other women to come work for me at that time and to paint for me. And that eventually morphed into having a team of sometimes of 10 women at a time painting on job sites for me. And that was awesome for many, many years. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I just saw this huge opening, if you will, on social media to take my business online and to try to teach other people how to fix up their own house and to encourage women to start, you know, creative businesses that maybe they would otherwise not be gutsy enough to start. And so I started really pushing my social media and really being dedicated and focused to that, and have grown to like today I have 267,000 followers on Facebook. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And like 450,000 altogether. And you know, who cares how many followers you have if you're not actually giving people value and teaching them things and, you know, building relationships. And so I'm all about like having a lot of followers, but having them be really relational followers. And in general, I just love women and I love encouraging women. And I feel like my heart is to just help them to create a beautiful home and to build their creative business. And that's kind of the tagline on my website.
Yeah. And you know what, that kind of, I'm going to jump a question and then I'll come back because you're talking about this. You know, what would you recommend to moms that, you know, have babies or small kids and they really want to start a business of some kind, but feel overwhelmed, or, you know, they have started and they just don't really know what they need to be doing. And I feel like social media is such a huge aspect. So it's not even just the actual like business that you're trying to focus on. You also then have to learn the social media aspect on top of it. And so if someone couldn't afford a coach, what is something that you would say to a woman with small kids that feels overwhelmed, but they have a great idea and they're just starting and they don't know what to do?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, when the Magic Brush was barely off the ground when I had Noah, and I will say this about women with young kids, they are the best time managers. They are the best negotiators. They are the best at hustling.
Yes.
They are the best at figuring out how to somehow sneak in a shower in between feedings and still make the bed and get dinner on the table. Like women with small kids, they are powerhouses. Most of the time, they're kind of, they're going on adrenaline and lack of sleep, but, I would encourage them to just be really honorable to the season that God's got you in your life. And I felt like I really did that with my business up front. I knew that the Lord kind of wanted me to stay home and raise my kids and yet not give up the business. And so you have to get really creative. And sometimes that looks like, you know, back then, 17 years ago, I was sending faxes to builders while I was changing diapers for my kids. And I can remember I did, did you ever see that TV show, ABC's Extreme Home Makeover with Ty Pennington? Okay.
Yep.
So I was on that three times. My business was. And so I can literally remember being on the phone, Amber, with one of the producers from ABC while changing a dirty diaper and just thinking, okay, I hope the kids, you know,
don't cry,
really, really quiet. Don't cry. Don't cry. And, you know, you just make do initially, but if you do it while they're little, you can kind of be building, like you can be doing the starting processes, which is figuring out what it is you want to do for a business. If you truly are a creative person, a lot of times this will be the biggest catch for people. And they'll come on, you know, my Facebook page and tell me, I have all these great ideas, Jennifer, and I can't pick one. And I will tell them, this is both the blessing and the Achilles tendon of being a creative person. There's so many ideas. And at the end of the day, you literally have to pick one. And you have to start with the one. And so if you love, you know, baking cupcakes and you love sewing and you love painting furniture and you love calligraphy, well, pick something. You know what I mean? I mean, sometimes you got to eeny, meeny, miny, that, moe, that stuff, or ask people that you know, or look and see what's really trendy, you know, on Pinterest and on HGTV and magazines, but pick something and then go from there. And the second catch that most people have from jumping to turning your creative passion into actually a money-making thing. It's so funny because I was just on television, our local TV show, Amber, talking about this very subject this morning.
Oh, awesome.
But is that a lot of times, you know, I'll ask women who are in the initial stages of their business, I'll say, so, you know, what's the name of your business? And they'll say, well, I haven't named it yet. And I'll say, okay, well, you have to name it. Like at some point you have to get from just the concept of I'm going to start a, you know, painting company to actually naming it. And I equate it to, like when you're pregnant, you know, when you're pregnant and and you're referring to the baby. It's kind of like when you're referring to the business, but suddenly when you find out if you're having a girl or you have a boy and you actually start referring to that baby with a name, it changes everything.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it's totally more legitimate, both in your mind and other people's minds. And so if you're somebody who's thinking, you know, I have this business idea I want to start, my advice to you is, well, quit thinking about it and let's start it and let's see what happens. I mean, it terrifies me if I think today of what if I had never just given this painting gig a shot. Like I would have missed this incredible journey that I've been on for 17 years. I got to go to Belize like the year before last and bid a painting job in Belize. I mean, talk about paradise.
That's awesome.
And I would have missed all that if I'd continued just to think about it forever. So pick a business name. Remember, you're not married to that forever. You can change it if you decide to change it down the road. But, you know, actually like decide that you're going to get a little more real about starting this thing, start a business and actually name it. And then you're going to have to start some social media for it. Like, you can't do a business anymore in 2017 without social media.
Yeah. And so if someone's listening and they're like, I am so overwhelmed by social media, what is one that you would say, you know what, I would really focus on this and really put your time in Facebook.
It has to be Facebook. And let me tell you why. Okay. First of all, it's just the sheer number of people. It's a numbers game. Over 1 billion, that's with a B, people every day get on Facebook. And I was just telling the TV show that I was on this morning, an old statistic. This is an old statistic, but an old statistic is that the average Facebook user gets on Facebook 13 different times a day. They log in 13 times a day.
Wow.
And so when you think of when you're on your Facebook page, or I'm on my, you know, Jennifer Allwood Facebook page, I have the opportunity to be advertising myself, for lack of a better word, 13 times every day to the average person.
Right.
For free. And you know, the thing with social media is I know it can seem really overwhelming. Okay. If your 13 and 14 year old kids can do it, mama, you can too.
Yeah.
And you know, if my 75 year old Aunt Barb can understand how to get on my Facebook live videos and comment, you can do it too. And so I always suggest Facebook. And then the second one I always suggest is get on something beside Facebook. I had my Facebook page shut down for 3 days, about a year and a half ago, and it was terrifying in me. And it reminded me of why we need to not put all of our eggs ever into one basket. Right. So I always suggest, what's the second social media that you're most fond of? So like for you, Amber, if you were just sitting at the dentist office and you're waiting for your kids to get their teeth cleaned, what would you go and look at if you just had time to sit on your phone?
Well, I would probably look at Instagram.
Then for your business, you should be focusing on Facebook and Instagram.
Right.
And so for me, it was Pinterest. I play on Pinterest. I use Pinterest like my Google. I mean, when we're planning our vacations, I never go to Google and type in things to do.
You go through Pinterest.
I go through Pinterest, baby. Absolutely. And okay. I type in things to do in Siesta Key in Pinterest.
I love it.
Yeah. Right.
That's really cool.
So, you know, I tell people to focus on the social medias that are their natural playgrounds. Where do you naturally hang out anyway? Because it'll be easier for you to make sense out of.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that is really good. And, you know, I was going to ask you, because you did start your business when you were pregnant and then you had the baby. What would you say your biggest obstacle was trying to start the business or get, you know, keep it going while having a baby?
Oh, comparison. That's a really good question. Yours comes up right away. You know, so when my kids were younger, you know, I had my business started. And like I said, my oldest is 15. We didn't have social media. And I felt a lot of times lonely and isolated being a stay-at-home mom. But I was also running a business from home. So I felt like, okay, I don't quite fit in with all the stay-at-home moms because I'm a work-at-home mom.
Right.
But I don't quite fit in with all the working moms because I'm working from home. And so there was this conflict like, okay, where do I fit in? And comparing myself to, you know, I'm not quite the stay-at-home mom full-time and I'm not quite the working mom full-time. And so feeling a little bit like, just not sure where my place was, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And unbeknownst to me, there was this whole incredible, there were tons of women doing the same thing that I was, but you know what, in 15, 17 years ago, we were much more isolated in terms of, you know, relationships and things because we didn't have Facebook. We didn't have social media. We didn't understand. I was reading blogs, you know, and that's kind of how I was getting my information back then. And so I think that then I would start sometimes to compare myself when I saw other women in my industry who were doing it full time and they were absolutely just killing it. I mean, they were being so successful and I was very successful in my own right. But at times I would feel like, gosh, they're all kind of passing me by while I'm staying at home, raising my babies, which I'm committed to, which I know I'm supposed to do, which, you know, I want to do. And yet this other part of me really has this business that I want to be able to focus on. And I know in my knower, Amber, that part of the reason my business about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, just took off like crazy, is because I really was disciplined in just being patient and just knowing that I'm going to honor the season that I'm in. I'm not going to rush these years of trying to get my kids into school, you know, because I know they're only home for a short time. I mean, what is that saying? The days are long, but the years are short.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to you know, eat them up while I could and be able to be the mom that went to every preschool event. And I was able to do all of that. And then when our youngest Ava Grace started kindergarten, I felt like I just had the freedom then to go full force all day, every day while the kids were at school. And I feel like now I'm in a season of really reaping from some of that seed planting that I did for so many years when I was home with the kids. So,
yeah, I totally agree. And I was going to ask you, did you ever feel like there was a time that you're like, why am I even doing this for the business? You know, I just, it's too much. I want to give it up. Or,
oh, Amber, this is like every other day. No, this is every other day. I think that people have this misconception sometimes of entrepreneurs and business owners. That, you know, it's all fun and games and paid days off. And that is so not true. I have my own podcast too, and which I know that you know. And my podcast today is about the 6 myths of owning your own business. And, you know, so I think that people, there's a perception that when you own your own business, you kind of have all this flexibility. But the truth actually is, when you're self-employed, if you're going to make a go of that thing, you will probably work more hours than what you would if you were employed by somebody else.
Sure.
I know one of my very best friends, she gets to work from home a lot. And we discuss this all the time. And she works for a big telecommunications company. But she says she gets to work from home a lot frequently. And she said she actually puts in way more hours when she's at home than she would in the office, because she's, you know, trying to make sure that the office sees that she's being productive at
home.
And, you know,
exactly.
That's kind of the same thing. I mean, being your own boss is fantastic. It's definitely not for everybody. I coach enough women that I can usually kind of pick out the ones that are going to struggle a little bit, and the ones that, you know, it's going to be harder for if you're not very self-disciplined. Because when you're self-employed, you don't have somebody telling you, okay, this is the next thing you need to do in your business, or here is what you need to get accomplished today. And so if you're someone that struggles with, you know, being tempted to go in and do the dishes during the day and, you know, have phone calls with friends during the day, like, you're not going to get accomplished in your own business during the day what you really need to. And so, you know, being your own business owner is not for everyone. I could not do anything but this. I know that this is who I am. And when I sometimes think about like having to go back to a desk job, I think like it makes me want to break out in hives.
Yeah,
I'm so grateful for the people that do, but I can't do that. I sit at a desk almost all day, every day in my own home.
Yeah.
And so it's still a desk job, but I couldn't go back to working for somebody else. I just couldn't.
I totally get that. And so how do you feel like you got yourself to not actually quit if you were thinking about it so often?
Oh, like, I convinced myself all the time that there was no way that I could make a full-time income off of painting. Like, I just couldn't figure out in my head.
Right.
You know, like how do people even make a full-time gig out of that? And I have this funny little saying. It's not even a saying, but I refer to myself as an SRP, a super responsible person. and maybe you know some of those, like a super responsible person. You know, she buys a house at 21 because she's tired of wasting money on rent. I mean, that's not a normal thing for, you know, most 21 people to do. Super responsible people, they just, you know, they're the ones that kind of do what they're supposed to. They're very much rule followers and et cetera. And so when you're a super responsible person, it's not really very normal for you to give up a really great paying software development job.
Right.
And to give up, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of PTOs and to no longer have a 401k for your, you know, business matching contributions. And so it was kind of against like the fiber of who I really was. And I remember when I got laid off from my job, and shortly after that, Amber, and it's funny, it's kind of come full circle. This story has, I was offered a job with a very large medical company here in Kansas City. And this again was 17 years ago. And they offered me $50,000 a year to do software development for them, which 17 years ago was a really great income. I can remember looking at my husband going, okay, I know it doesn't make any sense for me to say no to this, but the thought, like, it just, you know, in your gut, you know, when you're made to do something different, and when all of the logical, super responsible person part of me is saying, I know, but how are you going to turn down 50K and like roll the dice? And it wasn't like we were in a financial position where we didn't need my income, because we did. And yet I just was determined, okay, I will do about whatever is necessary to make sure I don't have to go back, you know, to sit in that desk job. And I'll tell you what that kind of predicament does for a person when they start their own business is it makes them hungry. And and they will hustle and they will work so much harder than the person who's just really casual about it, if that makes sense. And so I was never casual about my business after I knew I was going to try this full time. And so, you know, when I'm coaching other women right now, I tell them, if you know in your gut you're supposed to be doing something, it's not up to you to try to figure out the whole plan, like what this is going to look like down the road in 17 years. There is no way that 17 years ago I would have ever believed that I would be, you know, on a guest on your podcast today and writing a book and on television this morning. That would have blown me away. And I probably would have run in the other direction out of fear. And so it's good that God just gives us little glimpses of like what the next thing is for us. What's the next hunch, the next thing I think I'm supposed to be doing. And just to be really obedient to that. And you just like, you never know where you're going to end up. And so, you know, my first year of doing my painting business, I almost made double what I would have at that job that I turned down. And it's so funny too, because just a couple of years ago, the CEO of that large medical company that I turned down, you know, that job for $50,000 a year, 17 years ago, I got to paint in his house. I got to have a crew of 8 women in his house for 2 or 3 weeks painting. And of course he never knew that I like gave up a job working for him to do my own thing. But it was just kind of like, you know, just a little wink from God. Like, see that decision you were so terrified of 17 years ago. It's look what's happened because of just that step of obedience.
Yeah. And, you know, I was going to ask you, so how did you get it started? Like, how did you even get people to know that you were doing this as a business?
Great. Okay. You ready for this? Brace yourself, Amber.
Okay. I'm ready.
The yellow pages.
Oh,
do you remember the yellow pages? Yeah. Oh, God bless the yellow pages.
Oh my gosh. So like, what were you under, like painter?
Yeah. Well, here, no, I didn't advertise in it. I literally went to the yellow pages because we didn't have like all this.
Oh, right.
Google. And so, gosh, I sound like I'm 100, don't I? I mean, I'm not that old.
No, you're not.
But I literally went to the yellow pages and looked up decorators and designers in all of Kansas City. And I ripped out the yellow pages. I probably still have them actually. And I would go through every single designer or decorator line by line in Kansas City. And I would either call them, or if they had, you know, a storefront or a design center or something, I would literally show up on their doorstep and say, hey, do you have, not at their home. Like I wasn't creepy.
The business. Yeah.
And be like, hey, you know, I just started this painting business and, you know, I'm really interested in getting some work going and can give you a discount to start out. And I'd love to talk to you about, you know, yada, yada, yada. Well, one of the very first designers that I showed up on her doorstep, she ended up just so happens that she was needing a decorative painter. And she said, let me, you know, take you to go bid and look at this job. And one of the first jobs I did was in a house that was a million plus house. I had never been in a house like that size. It had like a secret room, Amber, from the bedroom into the bathroom. And I was like, you know, one of those actual like bookcases that turn.
Oh, that is so cool. Yeah.
It was like the Twilight Zone. It was like an out of body experience, you know, just to be in a house that grand thinking I don't belong here. Like I have no idea what I'm doing. And at some point everybody's going to figure out, I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I can tell you that 17 years into this business, I could paint a room with one arm behind my back, you know, because I've done it long enough. But I still have days where I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And it still feels hard and it still feels tough and it still feels like, you know, like it's so much work. And yet I would choose this and owning my own business and being self-employed and doing my own thing over, you know, being stuck in a cubicle like any day of the week, any day of the week.
Yeah. Right. I totally get that. And, you know, I feel the same way. I have a friend and she's very creative and she paints a lot of furniture and all that stuff. And we always joke, we used to work together before we had our first daughters. And we always joke about the beige cubicles, you know, I don't want to be the beige cubicles.
Yeah. And I'm grateful for people that enjoy their cubicle job. But I know way too many people who are waiting for the perfect time to leave that cubicle. You know, this is what I tell the women that I coach. There is no perfect time.
Right.
It's like the perfect time is like this elusive thing. And like, I remember that when we got pregnant for the first time and I thought, wow, this is not the most perfect time. I just started my business a couple of months ago, you know? And so it's like that. There's never the most perfect opportune time in it. And what we end up doing is we end up waiting to leave that job and start our own thing for, you know, well, when I get this bill paid off, or I get this kiddo back to school, or this kiddo through college, or this kiddo, whatever, or, you know, they have something in their head that when this happens, then I'll, yada, 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 start right. my own thing.
Yep.
And that ends up to turning into a year, which turns into a decade, which turns into, yeah. you know, a life of wondering, of regrets and wondering what would have happened if I'd gambled on myself, if I would just have put my chips down and said, you know what, I think I can make a stinking go of this thing and I'm going to work my behind off trying and seeing what happens. And you just literally never know.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? When you went to the stores, right, or the interior design yeah. place, and then did they? So you got into that big house. Did you actually get that job?
Absolutely, I got that job, and it was glazing some kitchen cabinets in a kitchen that was, you know, three times the huge. Size of the kitchen of my yeah. house. And I can remember bidding the job, and I gave my price to the designer. And you know, the thing was, she knew that I was brand new to this.
Yeah.
And she knew that I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And she was kind enough and gracious enough to say, oh, Jennifer, honey, you need to like triple your price. And I'm like, oh, wow. What? Triple my price? And
that's she goes, so nice oh. that she did that for you.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I've tried to pay that thing forward like a million times when I'm talking to other women and just telling them, oh no, girlfriend, you've got to value what you do and charge for your talents. And because when you're just starting out, you, the truth is you just don't know.
Right.
And unless you have somebody kind of taking you by the hand and leading you, you're just grasping for numbers. I mean, you can Google, you know, right. how much should I charge to paint cabinets? I have a whole class on, you know, painting cabinets and how you should charge them now. But back then I was learning as I went. And I think that I've always been okay with just making mistakes and not taking it personally and really trying to learn from them and doing what I call in failing forward. Like, you know, there were times that I way underbid myself and you learn from that. And when you walk away from a job and you've got a stomach ache, you know, full good and well, you need to charge more for it the next time and the next time. You do better because when you know better, you do better.
Right.
And so I got in, I think right off the bat with some really great designers who saw some talent in me and were just willing to take a chance. And the fact that they were putting me in front of their really great clients. I always knew that if somebody can afford a decorator, a designer, then they can right. definitely afford me.
Yes.
And so that's why I, you know, tried to go in that direction and position myself to where I knew my ideal client would already be. So I think it was a combination between getting with the right designers and decorators and then hooking up with the right builders. 17 years ago, we were doing, I mean, a crazy amount of home building in Kansas City. And so there were times when I was working a lot of new construction for builders in KC. And, you know, there were a lot of other people in my industry, but a lot of them weren't insured because when you run a business and as a builder, you need to make sure everybody that's in a job site, you know, has the proper insurance and all of that.
Right.
Well, I know it's a pain in the butt to pay for that stuff. It's expensive. Insurance stinks, yada, yada, yada. But I was always willing to just go that extra mile and make sure that I had crossed all my T's and dotted all my I's so that I could again be positioning myself so that I would be hireable by people like builders. And so we did a ton of new construction, which is what eventually led us to three of the episodes of Extreme Home Makeover and, you know, me getting flown down to Belize to bid a job for a client. And so it's just led to so many other wild and crazy things. It's been a super fun ride.
Yeah. So now what were you painting for the new construction homes?
You know what? So then 15, 17 years ago, we were doing a lot of faux finishing on walls. So a lot of texturing, a lot you know, marbling, and we did a lot of kids' rooms. And that has really morphed in the last 4 or 5 years, thanks to HGTV and Pinterest and things, into more cabinet painting and furniture painting. And so those are the two things that we probably do the most of, in addition to painting garage doors to look like wood. But, you know, if you look at HGTV, if you look at Joanna Gaines, who I've had the opportunity to meet 4 times and she's just a doll and I'm sure you know who she is, but I've been down to her store twice. And if you kind of look at what she's done with her brand and in the city of Waco and her store and things and the Fixer Upper show, that's really dictative of kind of where the industry's at right now. So a lot of no faux finishing on the walls, but painted furniture, kitchen cabinets that need repainting. You know, where we used to do a ton of new construction, now we do a ton of remodels. So people who are wanting just to update their kitchen and not necessarily buy a new home. And so that's a huge market for us in Kansas City.
And that ties into my next question. I do feel like people get stuck when trying to figure out what they want to do to change things up. And what are some things that you've noticed that is a great way to change it up without spending a ton of money? Where would you start?
Absolutely. Your wall color. I mean, there's just no better way of changing how your house feels quickly than changing your wall color. And so I know a lot of people will say, but I don't really, you know, I don't really like to paint. Okay, well, that's fine. You can get a bid and have somebody come in and do it for you. I mean, you know, we do straight painting in Kansas City in houses all the time. But it's so easy to do yourself if you're somebody that's on a budget. And, you know, people will say, well, you know, I don't really know the steps, like what I need to do. And I will say, you know what, this is a great time to call in favors from people that you helped move last year. You know, you've babysat their kids on several weekends while they've gone out of town, those sorts of things. Call your sister-in-law, call your friends, have a pizza party, and just have a painting party. Our friend group does this all the time, and it's an easy way to get your house done quickly. And, you know, the third thing they'll say is, well, I just don't know what colors. And I'll tell you to go to Pinterest and type in most popular colors for walls. Or if you go to my website, themagicbrushinc.com, and type in the words favorite colors in the search bar, I have like a list of my top 50 wall colors that makes it super, super easy. The problem is a lot of times people will go to, like, they'll go to Home Depot or Lowe's and they'll bring home 20 swatches from one paint store. And then they'll go to Sherwin-Williams and bring home 10 swatches. And then they'll bring, you know, they have some from Glidden and they have and Bare Colors. And then they'll call me and they'll say, I just need help picking out paint colors for my walls. And I'll go to their house and they have 50, you know, little stacks of chips of colors sitting there. It's no wonder they're overwhelmed. And so I've tried to make it easy on people to find their favorite colors, and Pinterest makes it so easy as well. But painting your walls is by far the number one cheapest and hugest thing that you can do to change the feeling of your house overnight. Hands down.
I definitely agree. And so let's move to the cabinets. So I feel like a lot of people get stuck because they're trying to think about resale value. So it's like they're having to decide, okay, well, if I paint it, then you're going to have people who come in and go, I don't really like the painted cabinets, or even people may love white. And then, but people are like, oh, those get so dirty. So I would love to hear your thoughts, because I'm sure you have to kind of consult people through this. Yeah. So I would love to just hear what your thoughts are on all that.
Yeah. Here's the bottom line for me, Amber. The bottom line for me is that too many of us women, I'm going to say women, it could be men, I guess too, but are decorating our home for this resale value. And I put that in air quotes, this resale value that may or may not even happen. And, you know, life changes at lightning speed. And so you can think to yourself, okay, we're only going to be in this house for 5 years. And then, you know, 15 years go by. And over the course of that 15 years, you've looked at your kitchen cabinets and you've hated them the entire time, but you kept telling yourself that you want to make sure they're okay for resale value, and you never even resold it. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
And so it makes me sad that people are decorating for the next person to own the home. And I, like, it just, it gets my goat. It gets my blood pressure up. And so while you're living in your house, make that house something you and your family want to live in. Unless you're going crazy and painting your kitchen cabinets hot pink or lime green. I mean, if they are, you know, white, gray, black, or any combination thereof, or stained a beautiful color, they're resellable. And don't listen to anybody that tells you that they aren't. You know, I get a lot of people that say, okay, we don't want to paint our kitchen cabinets because it's good wood. And I use that in air quotes again, good wood. And my response is always, who cares if it's good wood if you hate looking at it? Literally. I mean, this good wood thing, like, who cares if it's good wood? Slap some paint on that thing and make your kitchen something that you actually love. I mean, this is why I ended up coming out with a whole line of like DIY videos where I teach women how to paint their own cabinets, is because it is pricey to have a professional come in and paint them for you. It is possible for homeowners to do it if they know the right prep and the right products and the right steps. So it's very possible to do. But it is amazing to me, Amber, how when you change something like the look of your kitchen cabinets, it can make you go from feeling like, oh gosh, I'm just so totally over my house right now because I can't stand any of it, to falling like all back in love with your home again, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
And it's just paint. And if the color trends change in another 5 years, then paint them a different color. And yes, after they've been wood and then they're painted, it's very difficult for it to ever go back to wood. But I'll still go back to what I said. If you aren't somebody that loves the look of wood, then paint it, because while you're living there, it needs to be something you love, and you need to quit decorating it for the person that may or may not own it after you. That's silly. Yeah.
Right. I agree. And going back to people doing it themselves, what would you say is the biggest mistake that people do on their own when trying to attempt to paint cabinets?
Yeah, they don't want to prep them.
prep them.
They don't want to prep them.
Like and, sanding, you know, and priming?
Sanding and cleaning, honey. Oh, cleaning. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, there's a million different paints and a million different brands and things available on the market. And many of them will advertise themselves as no prep. And I never trust that. When you're messing with your kitchen cabinets where you have a lot of grease and you have your whole family in there a lot and you're going to be in there every day, you want it to hold up. You don't want it to be chipping off. You don't want it to look like it needs another coat of paint in a year. And so your cabinets have to be prepped. I don't care what product I'm using. I still clean with either TSP or something like Simple Green and a scrubby pad, because your kitchen, I know it doesn't matter how clean you think you are.
Yeah.
You have grease and you have food on your kitchen cabinets. And so that stuff has to come off in order for the paint to adhere well. It's just a matter of chemistry, actually. You know, it just, you can't have a barrier of grease from a Fry Daddy on your kitchen cabinets and expect the paint to stick.
Oh,
and so clean it and prime it well. And sand it. Sanding is what most people don't want to do. And And because it's messy and it kind of stinks and it's an arm workout and you know, it's not a lot of fun. It's not glamorous. And so if you're going to cut corners, cut them on the backs of your doors, cut them, you know, on the frame maybe, but don't cut them on your cabinet doors where you're going to be touching them all the time. Sand the fronts of those. You're not trying to get like all the old paint off or the old stain off. You're just trying to knock off the gloss, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then give the cabinet door like some tooth is what they call it from your sanding block. And that way paint can actually stick to it.
Yeah.
So you've got to clean them and you got to sand them. And that's the end of that story.
And then you need to probably, and then you have to have a finish that it can withstand, you know, being in the kitchen,
practice,
right? Cause people probably skip that. Yeah. I can see them like not doing
your wall paint. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You have to use paint for cabinets, paint for trim, something that's going to be durable. And so it's worth it to spend the extra money on really good products in your kitchen. If you're going to cut corners, cut it on a piece of furniture, you know, cut it in your laundry room on the cabinet if you're going to, but not your kitchen. It's too big of a project to DIY to have it fail.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you probably are going to say this depends on what your preference is with painting versus staining, but would you say one of them is harder labor-wise?
I think the painting is harder.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
because
it is.
you can take like golden oak cabinets, and I've got two videos on my website showing how to do it and make them like a chestnut stain or a dark walnut stain. You can stain over stain, and the golden oak color of wood is just, you know, it's so out in Kansas City, but you know, a deep rich walnut or some gray tones are so popular. And so you can get that look by staining over top of stain, and that's a simpler process than going through all of the priming and painting. And so it's easier, in my opinion, to stain them darker, but you know, it's just personal preference. Which do you prefer? It basically comes down to that.
Have you seen any pretty, have you seen any oak cabinets go to like a pretty gray stain where it's like almost a gray whitewash type stain? Have you seen?
I have a finish on my website called Weathered Wood.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's basically what it is. It's taking golden oak and we kind of do a wash of a white over top of it.
Oh,
and then we do like a combination of a brown stain and a gray stain both, because even though gray is so popular right now, I mean, it's all over HGTV and Pinterest and what have you. Just know that gray will not be in vogue, if you will,
forever.
It will. Everything cycles. And so it's usually about a 6 to 8 year cycle in terms of what colors are hot. And so gray will cycle back out. And so if you do your cabinets in like a mixture of grays and browns, or in any of your decorating for that matter, we just put in new hardwood floors and we got a combination of grays and browns both.
That way,
when the gray tones on the walls go out in a few years and we go back to painting builder's beige or whatever, you know, that it'll still go with
the brown
some of the
will
other
pull.
Things.
From the
That are harder to change.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the on your website, the one that's doing the driftwood? What is what the link is? Or
Go to themagicbrushinc.com and just in the search bar type in weathered wood, or it's up under learn. There's a learn tab at the top which shows you how to paint a bunch of different things. And so yeah, it's one of my favorite finishes. It's beautiful. It goes with grays and browns both.
And do you put the actual stains that you used?
Yeah, on the video. Yeah, I sure do.
Okay, cool.
Yep, all the links are there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, here's the other thing too, because I think this is where people get tripped up. They're like, well, I want to change the counter and I want to do the backsplash, and they don't have enough money to do all those at the same time. And so I feel like people get kind of stuck because it's like, well, you're going to paint the cabinets and they may not quite match the counter and the backsplash, until you switch that. Is there a certain order that you would say go in that order first?
Yeah. Okay. So this is kind of a like what comes first, you know, the chicken or the egg scenario. Because the truth is, when you're looking at your kitchen, what you see when you first walk into your house is the cabinets of mm-hmm. your kitchen, because it's lateral. It's going up and right. down. You really don't see the countertop, or because the countertop's lateral, I'm sorry. The others are up and down.
Horizontal. Yeah.
And so, so I always say that if for the most punch, the most bang for your buck, I always suggest people put their money into painting the cabinets, and the countertops can come. Now, with that being said, when people get there, if they have us come in and we paint their kitchen cabinets, and a couple of years down the road, they decide to remove their old countertops and put in new ones, there's always the risk that when they're pulling out those countertops that it's going to scratch, you know, our paint job.
Oh yeah.
And that's just a risk that, you know, we leave touch-up paints, we can go back and do touch-ups or what have you. But, I mean, the best case scenario, if you can afford it, the best case scenario is to pick out your countertop. Then, in my opinion, pick out your tile. Then, in my opinion, pick out your cabinet color. That's okay. But you know, a lot of people, they are not able to just sure. do, you know, a huge project like that all yep. at once. They have to separate it out for right. 6 months or a year. And that's understandable. But the actual painting of the cabinets is what's going to change the room the most.
But if you had the money, definitely go the counter, the mm-hmm. backsplash, the cabinets.
Yeah, that's okay. my opinion. And yeah. you know, if you go to like a kitchen, a type of a kitchen remodeling store, they will actually have, and even Home Depot and Lowe's, I have this now where you can look at putting all those things together. So you can, you know, pick out your new Silestone countertops that look like Carrara marble. And then you can put, you know, the gray and white tile, the subway tile or whatever with it. And then they also maybe have a couple painted cabinets there that you can put up next to it. So you can get it all visualized together.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Because it does help. Sometimes it's really hard to kind of visualize without seeing something.
It is.
Now, have you ever had it where people, especially with staining, that they don't do the inside, that they just do the outside frame? And I mean, when you open it, you do the outside part, but not like the shelves. Have you ever seen anybody try to do that? Or do you feel like, what do you feel about that? Like, are you no, you got to go the whole way?
So it's funny, in my own house, in my bathrooms, we shortcutted it and just have not done the backs of the doors on the bathroom vanities.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's bugged me ever since. And so it's not that much more usually to do the just backs.
Do it. Yeah.
And just because it feels so much nicer when you open up the door in your kitchen and the back of the door matches the front of the door. And I will tell you that when you're looking down the road towards resale, even though we're not decorating our house for resale, it's also important just to remember that it's those little tiny details like that that make the next potential homeowner feel like you either cut corners in the house or you did like a decent DIY job, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And, you know, this ties into, you know, we're talking about doing it yourself. How would you say to tell people to decide if they should do it themselves or if they should hire someone?
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes down to their budget, really.
Yep, right.
A typical kitchen in Kansas City, if we're going to paint somebody's an average size kitchen, you know, it runs $3,500 to $6,000. I mean, I know that's a wide range, but, and I tell people that whenever they send me an email asking, you know, what the cost is to do a kitchen, because I think sometimes people are really surprised by that. And that will make them say, okay, that's all I needed to know. And now we know it's a DIY project and that's fine,
you know, because
it's just out of some people's budgets. And, you know, it's definitely one of those things that people can do. The biggest thing that people fail to realize is the amount of time that it's going to take. So in addition to that cost, you know, an average kitchen takes 80 to 100 hours of labor usually. And it's hard, especially if you're, you know, a family that's got young kiddos,
right.
It's hard to cut 80 to 100 hours out of anything. And so we have some friends that have been, they've been working on their kitchen cabinets when they have time, because they both work full time, for 3 months.
Oh, wow.
And they're still not quite done. So they just do a couple when they can, you know, on the weekends, and prime them, paint them, glaze them, hang them back up. And, you know, so their kitchen's been torn apart for 3 months. And so I think it's a combination of how quickly do you want it done? And, you know, are you able to afford hiring it out or do you need to do it yourself? And so I think you have to take those two things into account.
Sure. Yeah, I do think that's a good point. And I do think that people could think that's expensive, but, you know, to replace your cabinets and all that stuff, it could be.
Oh, my gosh, it's like $20,000.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's where I think people are shocked because they're just comparing against zero versus yes. like what you would yeah. compare to getting a whole new kitchen. And sure. so, yeah, well, so we're almost at the end of the show, Jennifer, but yep. I wanted to pick your brain on this. What is your thoughts with, you know, we touched base on Pinterest earlier, but yep. now that you have Pinterest, I feel like it's so easy to just kind of want to keep making everything awesome and like, look at this and look at that. And they mm-hmm. have this and I want to change that. And I wonder if, you know, moms are really just feeling like,
discontent.
Yeah. And it's kind of like you can't ever be happy where you are because you're like, oh my gosh, I like that backsplash now. And so, and I also wanted to touch base on, after you answer that question, your thoughts on all the white trend and how in the world are people even keeping their stuff clean with small kids? I mean, yeah, it looks awesome, only... right? But I mean, how realistic is it? I don't know. But yeah, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's an illusion on social media. So that's a great question. And I do think, you know, whereas 17 years ago, there wasn't social media. And so there was a tendency to feel isolated. I think now with all of our social media, and we're just inundated every day with, you know, perfect Instagram accounts and perfect blog posts of people's homes and things. Now I think that there's so many more women feeling very discontent with their lives or their houses or their lack of, you know, decor or nice clothing or what have you, fill in the blank. And so I think that we have to keep in mind that when you're looking at Pinterest and you're looking at my website and you're looking at anybody's, you know, blogs or Instagram feed or whatever, that those things are not reality most of the time. You know, there's light kits and there's filters on the camera. And I mean, even Instagram has your own filters. And so obviously as a business owner, you know, you want to put your best foot forward and your rooms to look as good as possible so that you get hired and things. But I also think it's so important that people understand that that is an illusion. I mean, it doesn't look like that all of the time. And I think that there's something to be said for people that are just willing to be really transparent on social media. And it's one of my personal convictions that even though I'm showing you pictures of my living room when it looks beautiful and it's, you know, pictures of it are taken for a magazine. It's equally important. Last night, we had a Bible study in our house and we opened up the cabinet where like the VCR or the DVD player is at. I can't even, what are these techie things? Do we even have a VCR anymore?
DVD player.
And I was like, oh my gosh, look at this hot mess of a cabinet. There's all these old, you know, kids movies shoved in there and a box of Shutterfly pictures that may or may not get done in the next decade. And it was just all like whopper jawed and just a mess. And I took a picture of that and I put it on Facebook and I said, you know you guys see my house because, I'm supposed to be a professional at this and you see my house on my blog and you think that it's always put together. The reality is we have crap shoved behind our cabinets just like everybody else. And here's a picture of our DVR cabinet, you know, as proof. And I think people really appreciate the fact that I don't try to make it all look neat and tidy because life's not neat and tidy.
Right.
And I have a book that will be coming out this year. We're in the process of presenting it to two different publishing places this month, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
But it's called Hot Mess, typical DIY book. And it's really about trying to take that perfection factor out because it just leads to women feeling lesser than and discontent and like they can't ever measure up. And so, you know, sometimes I think it's good to take yourself off of social media. I mean, as much as it's a part of like my business and my business model, sometimes you got to know when to just back off so that you're not doing that comparison game.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because I do feel like you can constantly just feel unhappy with whatever you had, even if you just switched it. Even if you switched it to something and then you see someone else's and you're like, oh, I wish I would have known about that, you know? And so, and one more thing that I wanted to touch base on. I know you talked about really, you know, kind of utilizing your house for your needs. And do you want to talk about like, was it your dining room or living room? What did you change over when they were little?
Oh, yeah. It's so funny because we have, you know, what I think is a beautiful dining room in the house right now with this farm table. And I just painted the ceiling in it black and it's got beautiful navy curtains and it's really, really pretty. And I had somebody talking to me about it the other day and I'm like, but I need you to know that we've lived in this house 13 years. And for the first, I think, 6 years that we were here, it was a kid's toy room. Like, I think that we women have to understand that everything is so seasonal, whether it's, you know, the state of our house or the state of starting a business or, you know, relationships. All things are really seasonal. And at different times, you know, things are appropriate. And other times it's time to, you know, take the toys out and put in a grown-up dining room table. But for a long time, our dining room was our kids' playroom. And was it pretty to look at? No. But was it convenient and did it make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, it did. And you know, my husband and I, we're in the process of looking for a fixer-upper that we can make our own somewhere out in the country. We talk on occasion about, you know, do we do that or do we just buy land and build? And we built once before, and that's kind of an undertaking for any marriage. And, but when you have a wife that really likes nice things, it's even more of an undertaking.
Yeah.
And so I know, that for us, if we were ever to build again, like we would do without a formal dining room. That's just not, you know, people don't use formal dining rooms for anything other than maybe one meal a year. And I tell people, even if you have a formal dining room, if that's not what you want, turn it into a reading room, turn it into a library, turn it into an art room for your kids. Who cares? It's your house. Yep. And then they'll go back to the, well, what about for resale? Well, that may or may not happen in a decade. So let's focus on living in every square inch of your house that you have today and really making it usable for your family and the season of life that your family's in.
Exactly. Well, and our dining room is actually our workout room, which, I mean, it's a pretty nice workout room because it's in a dining room. So it looks really pretty, right? There's like the tray ceiling and you're like, I mean, but we have a really nice treadmill in there. We put those mats on the floor because it's hardwood. So we put the soft mats and, you know, we have a rebounder in there because to me, having a table in there that we may use one or two times a year really is not doing us any good. And having a treadmill and being able to work out when my daughter's napping or before they get up, that to me is more valuable, especially because we don't have basements here. A lot of the houses in Nashville do not have basements and I'm from Michigan. So I was used to that. And so having to shift and not have this place that you could put all that kind of stuff, you really have to think, okay, where are we going to put all this stuff? You know, I'm so glad we did it. And then our front living room, which I feel like a lot of times doesn't get used, that is now my girl's playroom. So exactly what you said. And yeah, you know, when you walk in, it's not like, oh my gosh, this is amazing pendant lighting and all this amazing farm tables and all that. And gorgeous couch when you walk right in. You have to get past that and then get into the great room and to start seeing more the grown-up stuff. That's nice. But we feel good that we're utilizing our whole house versus just being vacant rooms. So
You're only using that, you know, formal dining room two or three times a year, like you're forgetting about the other 362 days a year when you could actually be living in your home. And, you know, I know that, you know, a few decades ago, I can remember my husband talking about his grandparents' home had like plastic over the furniture. You know, there were certain rooms in the house you just weren't supposed to use. And that was, you know, part of that was just the time that they were living in. And but I know for us today, we like to entertain. We like having people to our house. It's very important to us for us to use every square inch in the way that makes most sense, you know, even if it isn't maybe the prettiest at the time.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, Jennifer, as we wrap up, where can people find you on social media and your website?
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so on social media, look for Jennifer Allwood everywhere. And that's Allwood. And on my website is themagicbrushinc.com. Or if you just even type in to Google, just Jennifer Allwood, it'll bring up my website and you'll be able to find it there.
Awesome. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was so much fun talking to you.
Yes, this was a blast. We need to talk again about just vacationing. That was fun.
I know. I mean, we could just spend a whole nother show talking about that.
Fantastic. No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much, Amber. Thank you.
Wow, you guys, wasn't that a fun episode? If you know someone who is wanting to start their own business or they are wanting to change up their house, this is a great episode to share. And if you are listening on your iPhone, the easiest way to do that is you can see at the bottom right-hand corner, three little dots. If you click on it, it brings up a new screen and it will say share episode at the bottom. That way you can shoot them a text or an email and it's the easiest way. So I hope you guys really enjoyed this show and I thank you so much for your support and I'll see you next week.